Mr. Drake, Reel 5. So, you'd been promoted to Lance Corporal. When did that happen?
No, that happened just before I was given the job of driving the colonel. So, I suppose it looked better a man with a stripe than an ordinary private to drive the colonel around. So, soon acquired me Lance Corporal when I took the job of, when I was given the job of driving the colonel around.
Now, did that, in, did that, was there a pay rise, did the pay rise go with that?
A slight, I think. I think my wife used to get 6 shillings a week, or 8 shillings a week, and it might have meant another shilling, something like that.
Now, I mean, you were a married man, 2 children, full-time job and so on before the war. How did the wages compare in the army with what you were getting as a civilian?
Well, they were very, very little. I only used to draw a few shillings a week, as the rest of it used to go into my family. So, I was never flush with money, I would put it that way. But I didn't mind as long as the family were okay and they could manage. And she did, my wife, she did go into a munitions factory in Leeds along with her sister, and they used to go together and work in the munitions, so she used to learn a bit as well as help look after the shop at night when they got home. So they didn't suffer a great deal as far as finances were concerned. They managed, we put it that way, they just managed okay.
Were a lot of your fellow recruits married, or what was the proportions, do you think, the men that
well,
you knew?
I should say a good 50% were married men. A good 50% were married men.
And was there a contrast between the married men and the single men, you know, the way you behaved and so
no,
on?
No, no, they all seemed to look in with one another.
Now, you mentioned earlier the Orkwood Squad and you being put in charge of the Orkwood Squad.
Yeah.
Was this before you were assigned as driver to the colonel?
Yeah.
Could you just describe what happened with that?
That was when we were doing this, what we call, what I always term as an initial training. But obviously we were getting good at the time, and so occasionally we were picked on to take the Orkwood Squad in drilling and on the rifle mostly, not so much on the Bren, because the Bren was a bit more complicated. It had quite a few stops on it where it could go stop and you had to know how to put it right, so that was a bit more complicated. And I always remember one fellow, he was a Yorkshireman at all, and no idea of how to use a Bren gun at all. And to get him to change the gas, which you had to crawl forward with a tool and turn the gas up or down according to how it was firing, no way. And I spent one whole lesson solely on that lad. And at the end of it all, he still couldn't change the gas. So I give it up as a bad job. I thought, all these others are not learning anything and I'm concentrating on this too. Because I thought to myself, this last thing I'll do, I'll get this fella to know how to change the gas. But anyway, I never did. So he was part of the Orkwood Squad, and but I managed to get the rifle and that all right, the rifle part of it.
What mistakes were
the shoulder arms and present arms and all this. So, although they'd all be all over the shoulder, you never got them in unison. You just couldn't. They weren't adaptable to it. And you used to scratch your head after a lesson and say, well, I did my best. And I always remember the way it was. he was a clever lad in his own right, you know, but he was not clever with handling weapons. He couldn't. He was pretty hopeless when he came to handling weapons. He was scared of them, I think. He finished up as, like you said, in the orderly room, and of course he was very, very helpful there. He was an office man, used to working in an office, and that was his job, and of course he was happy when he got into his own job. So he didn't, he weren't enthusiastic when it came out to drilling and learning about the different aspects of a gun.
What about the light infantry pace?
Well, that was well established in us, that 162 minutes. I don't forget that when we went on church parade, particularly. And there was a heavy artillery mob close by. And I think we deliberately used to wait while they set off before we set off to church parades on a Sunday morning. And they used to deliberately let them go first, and then we used to pass them on the road and stick his chest out, as much as say, what you're doing labouring down there, sort of thing, and we were speeding past them.
Where was this at then? This is in Scotland?
This is at Dunfermline. Church parades.
You mentioned the move to Dunfermline, and you were in better.
Well, we were in a proper billet then. We were in, as far as A Company concerned, we were in a factory with a big open space to when you, as you went in. Whether there had been doors on them, I don't know, but there was no doors on them either there. So there probably had been iron ones, and there had been taken for war effort, so you could walk straight in, and then of course there was upstairs where we all slept, and that we didn't use the downstairs. So there's still three floors. So I always remember one incident when we was on guard, and we were lined up with the guards, which there was half a dozen of us, and we used to have to pick up his rifles in a position so that we could pull the bolt back. And the officer used to come and inspect that you haven't got one in the up the spout. And you used to have to press the bullets down, then just close the bolt. And you used to say, right, close the bolt. And as he went down the line, one closed his bolt, shoved the rifle up, pulled the trigger, and it went right through the roof. Went through one bloke's shoulder, right up top, hit the roof at the top, the slate, came down and landed back in his shoulder. And he had to deal with it into hospital. And so there was a bit to do about that.
Can you remember who that was?
I don't remember the name of the fellow, but he was on the guard with rivals on that night. I aren't up there.
And what about the officer? What was his reaction?
I don't know. He'd be severely reprimanded, I should imagine. He's got his duty to see that they push the bullets down before they close the bolt. That's when he was going round examining that the rifle was clear. And sometimes he'd look down the barrel to see if it was clean. And then as he passed, he'd say, right, press down the bullets, close your bolt, fire the trigger. And of course he did. And that was the routine. This lad fired the trigger, but he shoved one up the spout.
Now, while you were still with Air Company, and you've mentioned the light infantry pace and the church parade and so on, By this stage, did you feel that you were a trained soldier?
Oh yes, we were fully blooded soldiers at this stage then. Oh, yes.
So you felt you were able to show off, really,
training that you had? Yes, we could walk in as head up high and straight up and along the streets of Edinburgh when we had the opportunity to get down into Edinburgh or in Dunfermline.
And how did you get on with the locals in Scotland? You've mentioned...
The local people were very good in Dunfermline. Apparently, before we went, they had Polish personnel there, which hadn't been very popular, whether it was the language or what, but they hadn't been very popular. So they were really pleased when we arrived on the scene. And they're very good. The local confectioner, every Saturday night, if you're on guard, you used to get volunteers to go on guard duty on the Saturday night, because anything left in the shop, and they used to send it up so there'd be trays full of buns and things for the guard. So we used to have a good feast on the Saturday night. There are no volunteers missing when it comes to Saturday night guard duty.
Now, you mentioned Major Hillis from your time in Air Company, and you mentioned George Gates. Can you remember any of the other NCOs and officers from this period?
None that I recall very well. I can't think of the corporal's name. But I was a member of JSM Gates. And I was a member of Major Hillis, because he was, as I say, a real gentleman, was a Major Hillis, nice fellow.
And George Gates was a
bit of a terror. He was a real sergeant major.
Could you describe a little bit more about George Gates?
Well, as I said earlier on, I got to know him very, very early, because he was responsible for me tracking around that field. However, he was real sergeant major type, as straight as a die, and all us commandeering wherever he went, you know, so nobody liked him. He was really, I wouldn't say hated, but nobody liked him. He was one of them sort of fellas. So I was glad to get out of A Company, because with him being there, because he was a fellow that I didn't like, obviously. And I was sorry when he, to a certain extent, I thought, when he came into, he moved from A Company into HQ Company, and I was already there in the MT. And I says, we're going to have some fun now, I says, this fella coming in. But of course he hadn't the same commandeering position as when he was with the company, because HQ Company were formed of different things like MT, Pioneers, Signals, Mortars, and the office staff, you see. So there was different sections to each company, so he hadn't the same authority coming down and giving orders, because he couldn't do that. So he finally got very pally with me, and it wasn't on my own behalf, but I accepted it, because he was not the one to get the wrong side of. So we often went for a drink when we got down to Rye. So
where was he from?
Sick disciplinarian.
Where was he from? Where was he from?
He was from down south of Watford Grap, that way. Because he was a veteran herdsman.
Now, by the time you moved to Dalkeith, you were the driver to the CO.
And,
and you mentioned earlier that you had your own billets and so on, had your own billet. Had you started going out on schemes, exercises, at this stage when you were in Scotland?
We did that when we were at Dunfermline, actually. When I was still with the company, we were going out on route marches, a 5 mile for a start, and then a 10 mile, and then a 15 mile, and then we finished up with a 20 mile route march. Those were put in while we were in Dunfermline, while I was still in the A company. But when I moved over, of course, to the M team, we didn't get any of that.
Could you just talk about the route marches? How did you cope with the route marches?
They were all right until we had to wear the gas masks. And when we had to put at certain stages, it said gas, and we all had to put this gas mask on. And still carry on marching, and they'd probably keep them on for about an hour, and come to the night, 5 minutes before the hour, you have a rest. You always have a 5 minute period before every hour. So when it comes to 5 minutes before the hour, and we took his gas mask off, we can take the gas mask off. We're about just full of water. We'll just scream out of you with marching with the gas mask on. It was terrible.
And they insisted on that at this stage.
Oh yes, I needed to do all the
and
then there was one other stage where I knew you were with my aunt, and they decided to dope the tea, morning tea, and we knew there was something wrong because it was sweet, and you could never get sweet tea like that in the army. So we knew there was something up, but we didn't know what it was because we all got sweet tea. We found out later on in the day when we were coming back from this route march, and everybody were having to fall out to go up into the woods and pull the trousers down. It was dope the tea, hadn't it? And of course, there was nothing anybody could do about it. The officers couldn't do anything about it. And they finished up with the party which hadn't, some hadn't managed to hold on while we got back. The others who hadn't came back later on in all information, marching, and some right NCOs had stopped behind with them. And of course, they come in and there were a big shout of SH1T as they all came marching back. that was one incident I will not forget.
Why did they dope the tea?
I suppose they gave them all a good clear out. sure.
I should have asked you earlier about kind of army rations and the food and so on. I mean, you moved from civilian life, you were in this highly disciplined environment. What was the food like?
It was plain, it was. I could always eat more, but at them days I could eat. And I always used to stay around the cookhouse for if there were anything left over, I was first in. I always remember the cook, even when we were in Edinburgh, at Troxton Road, and he used to come to the door, extras. He knew I would be there waiting to see if there were. My type was very close to the cookhouse door, so we'll first see if there was anything left over. So I used to get in on the extra duff, as we used to call it, the sweet, it'd be a jam tart or treacle tart or something like that, you know. We were all hungry lads, nobody left any food. It was always acceptable. We were too hungry to turn anything away.
Just staying on the business of the route marches, you cope with the route marches okay.
Yeah.
Were there other people that didn't, or did everybody?
There were some bad people that came back. I was okay. I don't recall ever having bad feet. I was always thankful that I got good feet, I tell you, because some of those lads, when they come back and they took the boots off, the feet wasn't, took the socks off, the feet were bleeding, and blistered and burst, and they were in a terrible way. Some of them, the medical was for 2 or 3 days afterwards, you know, after some of the route marches.
Was there a routine at the end of the route march where they would inspect your feet? Or not? How would that work?
No, not particularly, but the MO's assistant goes out to the MO's staff used to come round and bandage them up and things like that, the way they would treat them, wash them and make sure they were okay.
And when you were on these early route marches, you said they gradually extended them 5 miles, 10 miles, and so on.
Yeah.
How would you vary the pace as you were going on this? You wouldn't be at 160 a minute.
More or less your normal route march pace of about 140. And it's not the 160. You're always on the slow pace. You never increased it to be what we call the full marching pace. You're also on an easier pace, but then again, you have to make sure you've got some small men at the front.
Why was that?
Because if you've got a long leg man at front, the fellow at the back was nearly running. So you always make sure you've got some short men at the front who took smaller steps. Because you haven't got to the back one, you were taking bigger steps, which are more natural to a bigger fella. So you always found on the route march the line went
up
towards the end rather than the other way around.
Were you kind of introduced to any of the marching songs at this stage?
Oh, yes, I played and races. Every time I came back, it was to start up with the Blade and Races before we committed them permanent. Oh, and it was here. All singing at the top of the voice and all sick to death. But they always used to, every time they come back, they always used to sing the Blade and Races. I'll never forget that.
Any other songs?
Mostly Geordie or Old Army, what they used to sing in the First World War, pack up the tools in your kit bag and all these sort of songs. We used to, now and again, they'd break out into one of them particular songs, but it was always the Blade and Races when we came back in, when we were getting near to town, we were posters,
Do you have any memories of the DLI marching song? Do you remember that one?
No, that's the only particular marching song that we got when we were on any marches at all. When we were riding back, it seemed to be the natural thing. Everybody would break out. Somebody started off and they'd all join in.
Now, those are route marches. What about so-called field craft training? Were you involved in this?
We got quite a lot of that in different sections. And not so much while we were still in the north at Edinburgh, but we got a lot more when we got down to Norwich.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that then.
Yeah.
But at this stage, you were doing route marches.
Route marches.
In air company.
General condition, rifling, different things on rifles and Ben guns, things like that. I don't recall any field duties around about that time, but because again then I was in the MT.
Yeah,
I was out driving the Colonel. So the companies could have been,
But while you were with their company, you'd already been, you were organised in platoons by this stage, in sections. And so, can you remember who your platoon officer and platoon sergeant would have been before you shifted to MT?
Not particularly. No, only because the corporal used to take it right from the beginning.
But you were fully equipped with your rifles and brake guns?
Yes, everybody had the rifle, everybody got the normal equipment, the two poachers and the belt.
And had you started to train on things like the 2-inch mortar and the,
No, I never got trained on the 2-inch mortar. That was a specialised. You see, they came into the HQ. That was a specialised unit. So were the signals. You see, the only signals they trained in the signals, and that was it. Same with the mortar. And then came the MT, who trained on the motor vehicles, and eventually we got the carriers, of course.
Now, just moving us back, you got your first stripe when you became the CO's driver.
Yeah.
What else was happening during this phase when you were at Dalkeith?
Well, then we got the from the MT, we started, the colonel told me actually that we were going to have Bengal carriers, and we had to correct one from a certain place, and it says, well, he did say to me, you're too good a man for to be driving me about. He says, would you like to go into the carriers? He says, as far as your driving is concerned, he says, as far as I'm concerned, you're perfect. He says, would you like to go into the carriers? He says, and we'll get you some promotion. So he says, I'm reluctant to use you, to lose you, he says, but anybody else can come, if you're a decent driver at all, can come and drive me around. So on his advice, that's what I did, and I went to collect the first carrier from inside of Scotland, it wanted somewhere around there. And I went up there and went into this factory, and they brought it out into the field, and I had 2 or 3 hours in the field with it, and brought it back to his depot. So
you went to the factory where it was built?
Yeah, I had to collect it from the factory. So I got to, it was like driving a car, except for one difference. When you come to a corner, you change down, put your foot down, got your revs up, because when you turn your steering wheel right, it breaks the right hand side track. So if you got round the right hand corner and staying on the opposite side, if you pulled it down to the left, you braked the left hand track and it took you round onto the left hand side. So you're actually braking your engine. So that's why you have to keep your head up.